Our second reading today is a reflection of the book of Isaiah, which is often read at funerals. Jesus passes through the veil, and in Isaiah it says, the veil that is woven over all peoples is death. So Jesus is an image from the temple in Jerusalem, still standing at that time, with the Holy of Holies, and the high priest would come in once a year to beg for the forgiveness of the people, to turn away the wrath of God from them, and they would have fasting throughout the nation and on the Yom Kippur, and which still happens today among Jews, and then he would have a ritual bath in the bronze sea outside the temple, and the high priest with fear and trembling would go and pass through this curtain in the back to a room that was at the time of Christ completely empty, and there would intercede for the people. And yet he had to come back year after year because all the animal sacrifices couldn't take away the sins of the world. Only God can do this. So Jesus then passes through the veil into the tabernacle of heaven where he lives forever to pray for us. He passed through because he died. Our Lord is, when he became a human being, he became vulnerable for us. He became able to die, able to be put to death, to be rejected, in order for Christ to be in a position where we would have faith in him and to love him. He had to become vulnerable. We can't enter into any relationship, whether it's friend or spouse, without being willing to be vulnerable. The possibility of rejection has to be there. God in heaven cannot be vulnerable. He can't die. He can't be able to be betrayed. But Jesus became a human being so that he could have those things. The moment he was born, he began to die. Baptized a baby yesterday and also had a funeral. The two ends of life. And all of us are somewhere between those two things. And Christ, in becoming a human being, took vulnerability on himself for our sake and saved us from eternal death. This is a very great bearing on the Eucharist that we celebrate today. I want to begin with a story. When I was, I once went up to Seattle with a friend of mine who was a monk, and he had something to do up there, and so we stopped at Pike's Place up there. It was a lot of traffic and things, and I think I mentioned this once in the past. He and I were talking, and I was very distracted. The second time in my life this has happened, so I should be more careful crossing streets. And I, without thinking, I was talking with him. He's behind me here. And I just walked right out into traffic, heavy, fast traffic in that street there. And a passerby behind me, whom I did not see, grabbed me, seeing this, and tackled me to the ground. And I'm sitting on the curb wondering what happened. And by the time I came back to my senses, the person was gone. But my friend said, "Do you know what just happened to you?" And he reminded me of this a couple months ago. And he said, "You would have died if that man hadn't done that. So I would not be here." This happened 10 years ago. Another pastor would have come here 8 years ago, and I would have been 10 years deceased. At 8:15 in the morning, at the other mass, I'm always deceased. But if you've ever had an experience, a near-death experience, life is not quite the same afterward, and it's useful to go back and meditate on that moment. What did God save me for? What am I still here for? And Christ saves us from death like this. He pulls us back. He takes our place. He takes the bullet that we are meant to receive. This is our faith. He died on the cross so we won't have to. He paid the price so that we could get into heaven. It's not a free pass. We don't automatically go to heaven. Somebody had to pay the price, and it was eternal. Forget that. The Eucharist is all about that price, and all we need is faith. That's our bit. That's what we do. I had an interesting encounter with a story, that true story I want to share with you. I found it very moving. There was a pilot who worked for American, where I worked, and he tells a story of when he was bidding for a flight. He had an opportunity. It was legal for him to fly, and he looked and on the computer and realized that there was a flight that needed a pilot, and to his knowledge, he was the only pilot in the area that was available to fly that day. So he put his name on the duty roster for the flight, and then the way it works is somebody would call you back from what we called crew scheduling, usually within a half hour, to confirm verbally that yes, this is your flight, at which point nobody would take you off of it. You are working this flight. Well, he put his name on the computer, and unlike what normally happens, he did not get a call, and he didn't even think about it, had this bag all packed for the flight the next day, until the evening when his wife or somebody mentioned to him that he hadn't gotten this call yet, so he checked the computer to see if he was really on this flight, as he thought he was. Turned out there was another pilot that had also signed up that had just a little bit more seniority. So the other guy got bumped off, and he didn't fly that day. So the next day, he's sitting there, got up, and in case you don't know where I'm going with this story, his wife wrote a book about this experience, this extraordinary experience of her husband. And the book is called, that's why I've got my column here, In My Place, A Pilot's Story from September 10th through 11th, 2001. The pilot that outbid him was the one that went into the World Trade Center. And this pilot says, he said, that was my place. This is where, that was my moment of destiny. But at the last minute, unbeknownst to him, this man took my place and saved my life. And I'm here. It's a moment of truth, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever had that experience, somebody actually taking your place and saving you. My story is a little different. And the pilot went on from there, and the reason I mention this, why I think it connects with the Eucharist we're celebrating today, is he said, you know, this man is a believer. And he said, you know, I got to thinking about it. He said, this man did not save me from my sins. He didn't mean to save my life, but he did. He took the seat that was mine and went down, and I'm alive. But there's another one that I believe in that also took my seat, and he saved me from my sins. He took the seat that was mine and saved me from eternal death. And all of us have had this experience. That is Jesus Christ. All of us are on a flight, if you will. You know, we pull back from the gate, our birth or our conception. We begin a journey. And we, as we fly to our destination, which we've never seen, we live in life, between life and death. And without Christ, we're on a plane, perhaps going nowhere. Certainly to end in disaster. But Christ takes our seat. He takes that plane and puts us on one that lands safely. Gives us our destination. Gives us the assurance. Buys the ticket. And it is a ticket that we cannot pay for. It is too expensive. So this Jesus then, he becomes vulnerable for us. He takes our place. And the people of his era, you know, we're here at the Last Supper in the Gospel, and Jesus institutes the Eucharist at that moment for a reason. This is the moment of his greatest vulnerability. He became a human being precisely so that he could be rejected, so that he could die, so that his best, one of his 12 chosen disciples, one of them, actually turned him in. And all the others ran away. God made himself vulnerable to friendship that was then betrayed. I don't think they realized who he was, even the disciples. Nobody did. We don't even today, I think. And he says, I want to share with you my vulnerability. Before I die, here is my body. Here is my blood. I want you to be one with me on the cross. I want you to be in my blood and I in yours, so that when I die, you will die. When I rise, you will rise. I'm going to take your place here tonight when I'm betrayed. So that vulnerability then is continued in the Eucharist. We can't be there 2,000 years ago. That was an historical event. But he gave us the Last Supper to be continued throughout time so that all of us would be present at the Last Supper, which we call the Mass, and taught by him in the readings, so that we too will have his body and blood within us. Christ becomes vulnerable in the Eucharist, vulnerable to crumbs, to spills on the altar, to those of us who may receive him when we ought to go to confession first. We never said we're sorry. To people who don't believe, who make fun of the Eucharist, who say there's nothing there. It's the same as Christ on the cross when the high priest spat on him and said, "We knew there was nothing there. We knew we could kill you. You're full of baloney." But he was in disguise, you see. He deliberately allowed that, and he still does. He's vulnerable in many ways to us, not just in the Eucharist. That's both a fact and a symbol of God's vulnerability. On one side of the veil, we see bread and wine. We see Jesus, but hidden in under elements of bread and wine. On heaven's side is Jesus in glory. We're looking into heaven when we look at the Eucharist. And from there, we unite to God our own vulnerability as human beings. We too are extremely vulnerable. Everyone on that plane that died with that pilot is a symbol for all of us of our intense vulnerability as human beings. We need God to save us from that eternal death. We need him. We don't know where we're going. Without God, this world is lost. It's very evident from the local daily news. But we have the good news that God took our place. He took my seat. The seat that was mine is the Lord bumped us out in our faith. He says, "Let me take this plane. I'm going to give you another ticket. The price is too high for you to pay, but I paid it. Now I ask you to have faith in me, in your vulnerabilities. Let me be vulnerable for you." The Eucharist is the greatest gift we have of that vulnerability of God. He does that in order to be loved, in order to have faith. For that reason, he allows himself to be vulnerable to rejection. But we are not here to reject him, but to accept him, to accept the offer that he has given us to take our seat, to take our place, to give us a ticket on a plane that has a very great destination.